This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Liv and Lynn. I'm Troy Antic. Budget 2018 was tabled last month, and despite the various goodies included in what many have dubbed an elections budget, one sector that seemed to be not so much in the papers were the childcare sector. And I'm here to fill in that gap and tell me more about how the budget is affecting that sector is Datin PH Wong from Childline Malaysia. She's also a child strike advocate. Datin, thank you for being here.
Right, thank you.
I'd like to start with the positives first. So, one item that has been highlighted in the press was that local authorities must make it compulsory for new office buildings to have childcare facilities, starting with DBKL. Are you encouraged by this? Is this progress?
Yes, definitely. It's a good move. I think it's been a long time coming. The NGOs have always asked for it. But the question now is, you know, how will they do this? You know, will it be affordable? I think the big question is whether it's going to be affordable or not, because it is expensive setting up a childcare centre in an office block. And we've just had some issues with whether they could have it on the fifth floor, as high as the fifth floor. And that has been discussed as well.
Is there any fine print in the budget on how this would be carried out?
Not that I know of. I'm not aware of that. We've tried to get hold of the Ministry of Women as well. Has not been able to give us any details. Not as yet.
Yeah. Okay. What other positive have you seen in the budget that relates to the childcare sector?
I think there have been allocations towards for the expansion of Permata centres, which is great because I think they cater for the lower income. But I think the concern for Malaysia is that there's very little being given to the to help families in the low and middle income where two parents are working to be able to afford childcare, particularly in the urban areas, yeah, because it is fairly costly to send a child to childcare in Kuala Lumpur and the Klang Valley as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Permata, are they government-operated centres?
Yes, they are run under the PM's department as Permata Negara, and they have a large number of centres, and everyone is using the curriculum. It's the Permata curriculum. So they do have a wide number of centres that do reach out to the lower income families. Yeah.
So speaking about affordability, what are the options of parents, especially households with dual income, dual parents, both parents are working, like in terms of private and public, is it just those two?
Yeah, if a family has a choice and there's a public kindergarten or preschool or a childcare centre around their area, they would definitely send it to the government because it's so much more cheaper. In some cases, like Unity and all that, it's only a few dollars, you know.
Few dollars a month.
Yeah, $20 a month or something like that. Yeah, so it is fairly affordable. It's very affordable. But if you go to the private sector, then those that are affordable, then you wonder what is the quality of those centres. And I think a lot of parents are now sending their children to home-based. That means the babysitters who are at home. That's not unnecessarily a bad thing if the quality of care is good, because home-based is affordable. Is also flexible in terms of time, and it's a very home-like environment. So the idea is, how do we then empower a better quality care at home as well as services by the home-based childcare? Because there are a huge number of home-based childcare.
Mm, okay. Because I think the trade-off of a babysitter is might be cheaper, but they're not necessarily trained.
Yeah, I think the idea is with babysitting is just custodial care, whereas we all know that the first few years of the child's life, what's more important is that there should be stimulating environments for the children to develop as holistically in terms of their social-emotional development, their physical, their cognitive development. It's not just feeding them and making sure that they sleep and eat, you know, that's it, mm-hmm. you know.
So, do the public and private childcare centres, do they face the same challenges as well?
I think the private centres face more challenges in a sense that how do they make childcare affordable? Because it can be expensive to run a childcare centre. We've actually worked out last year for the council task force under the ministry. We've worked out that even the minimum, whether it's in rural or in urban or semi-urban areas, you would still need about minimum 500 ringgit just to run a childcare centre. only because the childcare sector is a special kind of business and service, because we are limited by the number of children you can take in. So if you're in a single-storey terrace corner lot, at the most you can take in 20, 25 kids. And then you're limited by the number of staff, you know, 1:3, and then 1:5 for the toddlers. And then just with the 3 and 4-year-olds is 1:10. So the high cost of staff. And if you want staff to have diplomas, which they should, you know, if they are teaching the little ones, a minimum of diploma, then the cost would definitely go up. You will still need at least 6 staff, you know, for a group of 20 to 25 children. So the cost of running a childcare centre is fairly high. And unless you can charge higher fees, then the question goes to, can the parents afford it? Especially if they have 2 or 3 children, and usually they will have 2 or 3 children below the age of 6. So again, that comes back to why people are sending their kids to home-based and the babysitters, because it's affordable. In some places, they're charging as little as $200, $300. Right. Yeah.
And for a private centre, was it 900, you said, that to send a child to a private childcare centre?
Well, the fees range, acting in the Klang Valley, is probably ranges between 600 onwards to as high as 2,000, 3,000 ringgit per child, per month. Really depends on where the centre is located and what is the income level of the people that they're serving, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it seems to me that this business model then is very challenging, it's not very scalable, right? You can't take in more students to alleviate the cost, and the cost is, you want quality inevitably
high. You charge
higher,
yeah, you definitely have to charge
so
higher.
So what kinds of proposals or suggestions would you give to the government? What would you like to see the government to help this sector?
Yeah, I think the fee assistance for childcare, which was given by the government, and I think it's still being given, but it's only for parents with a certain per capita income. It should be universal. You know, every child who has, you know, who should be able to access at least so many hours of quality daycare, childcare, in a month. You know, because we would like to see more of the fee assistance, and of course incentives for staff to be trained. I think in some countries they have given grants for the staff to be trained, as well as for the centres who meet certain quality standards are given grants to improve their centres. But very important is the fee assistance for the parents, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much was it or is it?
I think it was given about 250. It ranges between 180 to 250 for the Taska complex. They call it the Taska One Malaysia. There is a subsidy, I think, believe it's about 180 per child.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have been speaking to policymakers in the lead up to the budget over the past year in your various capacities in NGO. Yeah. What has been the feedback from them?
Well, I think the ministry did put forward, and we did have a consultation. They had several consultations with the NGOs, and they did put forward some of our requests, which was especially for the subsidy for the training of the Permata course, because the basic childcare course is the one that everyone has to have if they're working in a childcare centre. So it's fairly high for some of the people who cannot afford it. So I know that they did put in some proposals for that. And there is also proposals for the fees assistance for the lower income families. But we don't know whether that's going to be, you know, how much it has been given. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking about Permata, is it a program for gifted children, or does it have an admission test?
No. Permata actually started off with the early childhood, with the childcare. Okay, so we are referring to the childcare ones. And then there are also budgets being given for Permata Pintar, which is for the gifted children.
Right.
Yeah, and then there's Permata where they have a special needs school also. And so Permata has about quite a wide range of programs, and I think they cut across the whole spectrum of children. Yeah, but we are looking at they started off primarily to ensure quality childcare for the children in the lower income bracket.
Are there enough Permata childcare centres out there to cater to this need?
I don't think so, because if you look at Malaysia, the last statistics we had from the Department of Social Welfare, that we've only about 5,000 plus registered childcare centres, institution-based and home-based. So you're talking about a population of about 3.4 million children. And even if one quarter of that need childcare, we certainly don't have enough. And in the EPP1, for under the NKEA, had predicted that Malaysia needs about 13,200 childcare centres by 2020, which is 3 years' time. So if we have only about 6,000, 5,000 plus, it's a tall order to reach that target.
5,000 plus is both private and public?
Yes, yeah. Wow. Well, it's registered. Okay, of course, the number of unregistered, we really don't know. But the idea is that if they're unregistered, that means that you're already putting your child at risk. So we would always urge parents, please check whether your child's centre is registered.
I'm speaking today to Datin P.H. Wong about Budget 2018. And after this break, I'll ask her about the early childhood care and education policy that we have and its direction. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. My name is Chua Antik. My guest today, Datin P.H. Wong from Childline Malaysia. She's a child rights advocate and she's here today to talk to me about Budget 2018 and how it affects the childcare sector. So we have this early childhood care and education ECCE policy, and does it articulate if at all the government's idea on the path forward on whether or not how they are going to achieve that 13,000 private centres that we need by 2020?
Well, I think in the national ECCE policy, which there are strategies to implement, you know, to try to put that into place. And of course, one of the strategies is to ensure that there are more registered childcare centres. And then number two was to look at the professional development of the people. So if you look at the preschool sector, which is the 4 to 6 year olds, there is already a requirement by 2020 for teachers to have a diploma in early childhood. But it has not been implemented for those in the early 0 to 4, primarily because costs will go up. So it'll be very expensive for parents if all of the teachers have got a diploma, minimum diploma. So I think the strategies are there, but I think as with a lot of policies, a lot of things, it's a matter of how we implement it. But it would be wonderful to see a lot more working together with the NGOs. There are a number of NGOs that are related to ECCE, dealing with different communities. There's those deal with Chinese communities, the Tamil communities, which are facing problems getting good quality preschool as well as childcare for their children. So I think the policy is there, but what it needs a revisit to look at the strategies and say, how does it get to work? How do you make it affordable and accessible? And I think we did have about 2 years ago a lab that was initiated by Permandu, where we did look at affordability and discussed accessibility. So it's now implementing, having someone to push for the implementation of those initiatives that will make it affordable and accessible for the parents. Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand here. Yeah. If you want to tackle affordability and in the immediate future, the wages of the majority of the population will not be drastically increased, is subsidy not the only solution?
Subsidy is not just the only solution. Like 2 years, in 2014, we tried to get our childcare centres because they were complaining about high costs. So we said, why don't you go green? We said, task us go green. Because by going green, you actually save money and you can also earn money by going green. Because as a centre that's within a community, there's so much you can do to teach children and their parents about greening their own homes. And so you could earn from recycling, you could plant your own vegetables and things like that. I think there's ways to, you harvest rainwater, there's ways to bring down your costs. But because there's no way you can compromise on the number of children and the space requirements. So you have to look at other ways to bring down the cost. You cannot expect the government to give the handouts all the time, the subsidies all the time. You have to do something to bring down your costs as well. And that includes taking care of, make sure your electricity, water costs are down, your food costs you can't compromise. So definitely there's ways to work with parents on that. In some centres, I know that the parents bring the food, yeah, because the centre said we can't afford to pay for. Right. Yeah. So there are many ways to do it, but so it's a matter of how creative we can be. But I think the ideal thing to do is, for example, in PPR flats, you know, we are hoping to do a model now, is to empower the mothers to do better care at home. Yeah,
better
provide them with some training so that they're more registered home-based childcare centres that will be convenient, that will be accessible to the kids and probably a bit more affordable. But that doesn't mean that we do away with the institution-based, because for the babies, the 0 to 2 is fantastic if they're in a home-based childcare centre, because it's a very home-like environment. It's like their own home. But when they're older, they need to interact with other kids. Then the institution-based centres are a place that's going to have that all the creative activities for the child. So I think you need to have a good number of different types of centres. In fact, in Malaysia, there are 4 types. The home-based, the institution, and now, of course, the concentration is on the workplace, where it's at the workplace, which is great. And of course, we have the community-based ones as well. But I think we don't have enough.
Mm. You know? So this all sounds very common sense and doable. Why do you think some of these ideas or proposals have not been formalized or included in the budget or in policies?
I think it's been tried. If you look at the idea of having Taska One Malaysia, the idea was to make it affordable for parents. And I think those people who are fortunate to have a Taska One Malaysia around them, it is affordable, okay? Or they have a Kemas childcare centre around, it's affordable, right? But the question is, how many are there? It doesn't reach out to all of the population. So we need to look at how can we scale up these centres and make it more community-based. In many, many countries, what happens is parents themselves run community-based childcare centres. The parents get together, they form a cooperative, and they set up the centre themselves. So automatically the costs go down.
Why does it go down?
Because then if they can take turns to take charge of the centre, the community owns the centre, parents volunteer to be there, to run activities. Yeah. Then, of course, it brings down the cost. They run play groups, it brings down the cost.
Do you see that happening here?
Well, it can happen. It's starting to happen, I think, but not in the lower income areas, mainly because the parents are busy working. So you don't have many stay-at-home mothers as well.
Mm. Yeah. This would be easier to implement in an apartment or flat setting, isn't it, compared to a
residential
area?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And it'd be more convenient for parents.
Okay. So what would you have liked to see? Because you wrote a post on Facebook saying this is not a very friendly budget for parents struggling with childcare. What would you have liked to see more of in the near future?
Yeah. Basically, that means Malaysia as a country would look at, that early childhood quality, access to early childhood care and education is a right for every child. Whether your child in the urban area, whether a child in Orang Asli or anywhere in Malaysia, it is a right for them to have early childhood. And research has proven that for every dollar you spend in early childhood, you will save about $7 to $8 in rehabilitative care for a child who doesn't have the start, the fresh start. I think it's so important that we have to recognise that. So I would think that the future budgets, we hope to see more being invested in the early years and not just tackle problems at the other end when it's too late. So if you want to change anything, change it when the children are very young, because that's where the foundation is. Mm-hmm. So we need a comprehensive policy. We need to look at budgets across. We need the data. I would like to see more data and more transparent, disaggregated data where we can then see where is the greatest need for childcare. And why are people not being able to access childcare? And are the issues because of the poor care the children have? Are there more cases of abuse? Are there more cases of neglect? Because as you know, divorce rates have gone up. More kids are in single-parent families. So again, those are stresses that the family has to face, right? So I would like to see the budget, to be more child-friendly, child-friendly budget that is will put more money into the early years.
Can I get you to expand on that, Ling? That every dollar you spend in quality early childcare would save you 7 and 10 in, okay. In the future in terms of rehabilitative costs?
Yeah. I think there are about 4 or 5 different researchers overseas. The Paris School Project is one, which already has said that if a child has a good beginning, you won't see they will have a stable beginning. They have foundations in social-emotional development. They have a violence-free early childhood. They will grow up as stable adults and stable young people. I think personally, I was very glad to know that I was just up in a month ago in the Belum Rainforest, and there are not even a childcare centre. It's not even a preschool. It's just a toy library where the kids come and play. There's no formal learning. And yet, the research has shown over the last 10 years, the kids who enter the toy library at 2 years old and were there are now in about Form 4, Form 5. The dropout rate is only 30+%. Whereas those who did not go, the dropout rate was 70+.
Wow.
So it takes a long while to see the results, and that's why I think people don't see the need to invest, because the investment is not immediate results. The child needs to grow in, and you see the results when they are in their teenage years, that they are stable, they are able to contribute back to society. If a child is abused in early years or any time, say in their primary years, the country has to spend more on healthcare. Yeah. It will reduce juvenile delinquency. Yeah, there will be less truancy. So you're looking at having emotionally stable, really kids who can think on their feet, who can interact with other people, who learn about unity and who learn up to cooperate with other people. That is the foundation, is laid during the early years. So once you have that, and if you look at research, even through programs like Head Start and Sure Start in the US and UK, it has proven, one, for every dollar you spend, you save 7 to 8, sometimes up to $10 in rehabilitative care. In terms of special needs, in terms of emotional needs, you don't have to spend that healthcare money.
Mm-hmm. Do the decision makers find those arguments persuasive?
Well, I think the Ministry of Women has put forward that argument, and I think there has been a lot of people, NGOs as well, who have put forward that. But I think a lot of other things come into play when you do a budget for a country, yeah? And it needs political will, it needs a champion within the government, a champion, the parents need to stand up for their child and say, our children need, and it is their right to assess quality early childhood care and education. So again, if you have billions of dollars, what we are saying is we don't need a lot, but we need some of that budget to come in to make sure that our children have a good start in life. Because as they say, good beginnings never end. They will be there for the child. The child will be stable citizens who will contribute to the society.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Can I maybe put you on the spot and ask you how much you think should be allocated from the budget to the childcare sector? And because always, I guess the Prime Minister would say that it's a budget that is inclusive, and they try to cater to as many stakeholders as possible. So where from among his allocation would you reallocate those funds in order to give more support to the childcare sector?
Well, basically, I think there have been a lot given to families for, to make their lives easier, to make it more affordable. The tax has been reduced. But specifically, there should be more towards the cost of childcare. I think that's important. We're not saying that take away something from something else, but probably if you spend more in early years, you probably don't have to spend so much in healthcare. But again, early childhood education is part of education, and it's a right for every child to have access to that. So I think we're looking at Malaysia having signed the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Where are we when it comes to children? And if they don't have the early start, what are the consequences for the country? We have to ask that question. Yeah.
So one indirect point that I've seen made about how it's easier to get childcare for your children is that it's easier now to hire domestic help because they have removed the need to go through a third-party agent. But you think this is detrimental to the early development of children?
Obviously, a lot of parents are going to be very happy that they can have bring the maids in directly. But I think they have to think about maids from different countries, the different culture, different language, different values. So, and if they're untrained, what are your children going to be growing up, you know, as in terms of values, right? It will help if they are trained to work with children. But if they are here just to do housekeeping and then they're just having to babysit, that is not going to be good for our children, yeah? Because there are so many risks attached to it. Are they being screened? You know, are they being screened for whether they are emotionally stable enough to look after the children? So many questions. But I, for one, is not agreeable to having a child being brought up by a foreign maid. I mean, and not the thing is, not many parents can afford a foreign maid anyway, you know. But again, like I said, it is not, I think every child should have early childhood that has stimulating. It's not just babysitting. So I think parents have to think very carefully. It will help you with housekeeping, but don't leave the caring of your children, the education of your child in the hands of that maid.
Just to stay on this point on risks and early development, can you tell us about this point that you made on this same Facebook post about how the demands that were placed on taskers when schools and kindergartens nationwide were ordered to shut down because of the haze?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. That was a time when I think our childcare centres were hopping up and down because they said, you know, why it's compulsory for all schools to close there and all preschools were closed. There was a reluctance to say that all taskers should close. So what happened was, I think there was an indirect result was, because parents could not take leave for so long, they started to send the older children, the primary school kids and the preschool kids, to the childcare centre, which is already so stressed out because in every childcare centre, you cannot afford to have extra staff because it's so tight already. So imagine that poor care provider now not only has to look after her five children, just additionally look after older siblings and all that. So younger children will be at risk. You are actually putting children at risk when you mix the age groups. That's why there's very clear guidelines as to having a childcare centre 0 to 4, 4 to 6 and a after-school care is a different type of license, you know, because it's put unnecessary stress on the industry. So the crux of it is, it reaches a stage where some of the posts, if you look at some of the posts, they say, maybe we should just close 1 or 2 weeks for cleaning. That's what they suggested. And then see what parents will do, you know. But again, we say that's not the thing that we should be doing, also because there are repercussions. And it may not be good repercussions, right? So we have to find a solution that will make everybody happy. The childcare centre is providing a service, but it's a very different type of service. It is, in fact, at one stage, we were saying that it should be, it was proposed even at the ministry and by YB Chumei Fund, that we should even consider it as a social service, particularly for those childcare centres that are serving the poor and the low and B40 and M40. It is a social service. They will make some money, but they don't make a lot of profit because of the fact that the parents can only afford 300 ringgit. So let's look at it. It can be designated a social service like the clinics, the hospitals. That will help to bring down the cost because then you're not charged commercial rates for your electricity, for your water. So many things will be affordable, right? So I think we have to think out of the box. Malaysia needs to think out of the box and say, let's rethink how we look at children in the early years. You know, look at I'm not talking just Singapore, but many other countries have already started to look at early years, you know, and there's been, I think in Australia, there was a 1 week off day when all the childcare centres, most of them anyway, decided to close for a week.
What happens to the kid?
They have to send them to parents. Parents have to take leave, or they have to send to relatives, you know, if they have their relatives around. But I think it's a very difficult situation because they do need the care because parents are working and both parents have to work now. So we have to seriously look at who's caring for the children of Malaysia. if both parents have to work. And you know, the country wants 59% of women in the workforce. So who's going to look after the children? Foreign maids or babysitters? Unregistered, unqualified, you know. I mean, there's some very good babysitters who are, you know, who've got their qualifications, but generally no, right? So we're looking at the largest number of children in the age group is actually in the early years, and yet so little is being spent on them in terms of, especially for those who are in the middle income. Low income, there's a lot of centres for them as well, like Permata centres. But what about the middle income? They don't qualify for any subsidy. You know, so they live with the babysitter next door. Yeah, so we really need to look at how do we ensure our children are safe in safe, conducive environments when we go to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just to close off, are there any countries with models we can emulate, you think, who have found the, I guess, the solution for the dual working household?
I guess a lot of people have been looking at Finland and Sweden and all that, but so little lot way off, you know, because it will take a number of years to reach that level where, you know, but closer to home.
What kind of solutions
do
you have?
You see, they have such family-friendly policies where the parent can take off, you know, and then the children have got people who have masters and PhD teaching them. And the group is so small. But closer to home, probably Singapore, I think could be something that we looked at because it's more familiar to us. They have got very good like incentives within the HDB flats, right? And I think in 2013, they set aside $3 billion over 5 years to escalate the childcare from, I think they only had 4,000, they doubled it. You know, doubled it. So there was real what a decision to make that for 5 years, $3 billion. That's a lot of money. And they're seeing the results. You know, I think they're seeing the results. It's very interesting to look at what Singapore is doing. Not to emulate them, because I think Singapore has a different culture altogether, but to take the best practices from different countries and then fine-tune it to what Malaysia needs and implement what we need for our children. That's it.
Thank you very much for speaking to me today. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.